It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. This Labor Day weekend marked the end of what one tourism official called a Goldilocks summer. Not too hot, not too cold, not too rainy, not too dry. And while official numbers aren't out yet for summer 2012, anecdotal evidence suggests the Granite State's tourism sector had a successful season. Our guest today will be among those analyzing the data when it comes, but examining it for the last time. We're talking with George Ball, Commissioner of the state's Department of Resources and Economic Development, which includes tourism, state forests and parks, a business resource center, and an international commerce office. After almost 13 years leading the department, Ball is retiring in November. For many, his name is synonymous with economic development, especially in the North Country, where Bald is widely praised for his service to the region as it endured a transition from a timber and paper-based economy to a new, less certain future. Bald was also at the helm as New Hampshire overall went through a recession, and he's weathered massive political shifts as the state legislature switched from Republican to Democrat and back again. Today in The Exchange, we look back at Commissioner Bald's career and the changes he's seen, and let's hear from you. How would you rate the Granite State's economic development approach? What do you think New Hampshire state government, and specifically Bald's department, could do better when it comes to improving the overall economic climate here? And also, as he retires, what memories or questions do you have for Mr. Bald as he prepares to step down? Give us a call, the exchange number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. And Commissioner Bald, welcome back. Nice to see you.
Good morning.
How did it feel to write that letter to Governor Lynch and say, hey, after almost 13 years of leading this department, you're done? How did that feel?
Well, in some ways it felt good that I was finally kind of giving some thought to retiring. There was some sadness. I've really enjoyed the opportunity to work for the citizens of New Hampshire, and the people in my agency are just terrific to work with. And so there was some sadness there, but it was pretty exciting. And the governor and I had talked about it, certainly before I sent the letter a number of times. We had discussions, and I thought the timing was right for me personally to go now. And it'll give the new governor an opportunity. He or she can put in a person. It's a key position in state government, and they – we'll have that opportunity to put somebody in January.
And remind us, Commissioner Bald, of just how many years it's been, because you were there, then you left, then you came back.
Right. I was Governor Shaheen, now Senator Shaheen, appointed me in 1998, and I served approximately 6 years. And then I went back to Pease, where I had been before as executive director. And then after a couple of years, Governor Lynch asked me to come back as commissioner. So I came back in 2006. And so it's been approximately 13 years adding both together.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, I've been doing this program for 17 years. So for a big chunk of the years that I've been sitting in this chair, you have been Commissioner of Resources and Economic Development.
Yes. It's I don't know how many times I've been on the show, but it's I've really enjoyed the opportunity to discuss the variety of issues that that DRED has to deal with. It's a remarkable agency. It's one of the few states where resource protection and economic development are together, and I think it makes a lot of sense. And I hope that New Hampshire keeps it that way for many, many years, because it's important for us to have a good environment. When companies come here, when visitors come here, they recognize that having a good environment, having good recreational opportunities are as important to attracting business as it is for anything else. Whether businesses locate in an area where they can get good employees, and they can get good employees where there's good recreation opportunities. So having resource protection and economic development really makes a lot of sense. We need a good environment, but we need a good economy to keep that environment good.
Yeah, it's interesting, and you and I have talked about that over the years. Most states don't put economic development in the same department as, state forests, state lands, state parks, but you've always said, no, it's not contradictory, it's complementary.
It is indeed, and I think it allows us to have a better relationship with a lot of the environmental organizations. It helps us to understand the issues that they're looking at and how they're looking at it. And it also allows them to understand the issues that we're dealing with and how we're trying to help create new job opportunities. You know, some of my counterparts in certain other states tell me that it's, you know, a drag-out fight. Their Department of Environmental Services, you know, it's kind of always a fight. And in my case, we have an excellent relationship with DES, and they are wonderful people to deal with. They clearly understand that they've got a mission to have a good environment, but having a good economy helps them as well. So I think it does help us to keep that focus on both economy and environment.
One of the big pieces of your portfolio at the department is tourism, an important part of the state's economy. I think the second largest or third largest
sector.
It
is the second largest part of the state's economy in terms of jobs that are supported by that activity. Last year, we had approximately 34 million visitors, both for tourism and business purposes. And it does, you know, the second largest after business profits tax is the rooms and meals tax. And a big piece of that is paid for by our visitors.
So how have you seen the state's tourism sector change over your tenure in office since, you know, the mid to late 90s? I would imagine it's pretty different today.
It's dramatically different. How people make their decisions on vacations, where they get their information, and when they do it. It used to be that, you know, in February or March, most of the big hotels had a clear understanding of, you know, how many people they were going to have in August. Now people are waiting till July, looking at the, you know, long-term weather forecast and then making their reservations, doing it online. So there are an awful lot of changes. But I think it's still, you know, very important. Weather is one of the crucial pieces.
That hasn't changed.
It has not changed. Certainly the price of gasoline has an impact. But also how a state promotes itself. And I think that there's been an awful lot of work with our new branding effort. And the tourism department has really also worked very hard to get involved with the new social media, tweeting and all the online activities that help us to do better promotions. I think we're doing a better job of coordinating what we do so that, you know, if we're running ads in the New York area on TV, we're also complementing that with ads in the subway and other places where people are constantly seeing New Hampshire. And I think also we've gotten some wonderful publicity of things that we didn't pay for, but were able to get, again, in the New York Sunday Times, an article about, you know, some activity going on in New Hampshire. A lot of work up in Quebec and Montreal, getting stories about Hampton Beach and hiking in the mountains, and those things are really paying off.
Well, and as I've heard, Canadian visits were way up this year because they can bring more goods back duty free, and that's been a huge boon to New Hampshire tourism this summer.
Absolutely. And I can tell you, you know, a number of times I've gone down to Hampton midweek just to walk around, and it amazes me how many times you hear a French Canadian or the French language being spoken. It's wonderful. We have a good relationship with Quebec, both as a trade partner for on the economic development side, but also as the number of tourists that come. Both the province of Quebec as well as Ontario, about 42% of our trading comes from Quebec, 42% from Ontario. But the visitors, it really has been remarkable. And of course, because they're almost at parity on the dollar, it has been very nice for them to visit New Hampshire. And as you mentioned, because they can bring back more goods, it really has been super for us.
That's another change from about a decade and a half ago. The Canadian dollar used to be a lot lower than the U.S. dollar, so it was more advantageous for us to go up there than for them to come down here.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Let me invite our listeners to join us, Commissioner Bald, and then a couple more questions about tourism. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. George Bald is here, Commissioner of the Department of Resources and Economic Development. You can join us with your questions. As Commissioner Bald steps down, do you have specific thoughts or questions about what his department has done for the New Hampshire economy over the years? What do you think the department could do better when it comes to improving New Hampshire's overall economic climate. And since we're talking about tourism right now, if you're involved in the tourism industry, what are your thoughts on tourism development in the Granite State? Our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. One more question on this, Commissioner Bald, since you mentioned it, the idea of New Hampshire's brand. Back in April, we talked about New Hampshire's new slogan. It was Live Free and... You fill in the blank, and then people could fill it in with live free and kayak or live free and hike or live free and shop or whatever. You came under some criticism at that point. People said it's kind of vague. What do you think? Has it proven to work to attract outsiders or not?
I think it certainly has. There was an awful lot of research, and they had different testing that they did, and this just was, by far the most not acceptable, and also was kind of resonated somewhat with the way people looked at New Hampshire. And I think that somebody gave me a birthday gift last month that it was a T-shirt and it had "Live Free and Fish" on it, and I thought, isn't that wonderful that people are really adapting to it? Certainly, Ski New Hampshire is going to do quite an effort on Live Free and Ski. And I think that it's, again, it reminds people of recreating and living free. There's a lot of things that you can, think about it that way. But that Live Free and Ski or Dine, the Lodging and Restaurant Association has done a wonderful job of Live Free and Dine. And I think you're going to see a lot more uses of it. And it will become that brand that people think about New Hampshire and think about all the good things that that come with the Live Free end.
It came about after a national survey found that most outsiders didn't really know what New Hampshire was all about. They knew what Vermont was about, cows and dairy and quaint towns, and they knew Maine was about lobsters and seacoast and, maybe moose in the woods. But they really didn't know what New Hampshire was all about. And I wonder if an open-ended question is the best way to clear that up.
Well, I think our numbers are increasing, and so I can't say that that's the only reason, but I certainly think that it is having an impact, and I think that it's helped us to concentrate to bring a fresh program out, and so I believe if you look at license plates as I do, you'll see there's a lot from New York where we're working hard to do that.
All right, and we will talk more after a short break and take your calls, so stay with us.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and more with outgoing Commissioner of the New Hampshire Department of Resources and Economic Development, George Bald, on the Exchange, and a 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, what to expect in the Democratic National Convention. New Hampshire weather today, cloudy, scattered showers, chance of a thunderstorm, high 73 to 78 degrees. Tonight, cloudy, periods of rain, some showers may contain heavy downpours, lows tonight, 60 to 65. And then tomorrow, cloudy, showers, and the chance of a thunderstorm, high 70 to 75 degrees. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Lars Heating Systems, manufacturing boilers and water heaters for homes and commercial buildings for over 60 years. Built in New Hampshire with pride. LAARS.com. And the Joslin Diabetes Center affiliate at Frisbee Memorial Hospital in Rochester, offering comprehensive diabetes care to patients across southeastern New Hampshire. FrisbeeHospital.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, New Hampshire Department of Resources and Economic Development Commissioner George Bald is with us, looking back over his long career with the department as he prepares to retire in November. Join us with your questions or comments for Commissioner Bald, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. How do you think New Hampshire state government, and specifically Bald's department, could do better when it comes to improving our overall economic climate in the Granite State? Also, what memories or questions do you have for Commissioner Bald as he prepares to step down? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Commissioner Bald, before we go to our listeners, I did want to talk to you about another part of your portfolio at the department, and that's natural resources, state parks, state forests. During your tenure, there's been lots of questions about the state parks and how they're funded, whether that's enough. Just remind us first how state parks are funded here in New Hampshire.
Well, we are the only state in the country where our state parks are completely self-funded operationally. That is, The day-to-day activities, everything all comes from the revenue that we collect of people that visit some of our parks that do have fees, parking meters at Hampton Beach, fees at Cannon Mountain, fees at the Flume. And so it is a method that the legislature has decided that we should do. And so I think that we're doing a wonderful job in that area. It's hard when it comes to making some of the capital improvements, and the legislature has been very generous to the park system. I think that they understand that it's important to keep ahead of the game on our capital improvements. So we were able to get the revenue to do the work at Hampton. We get about $2 or $3 million a year to maintain our buildings, parks, and forest and lands. We have over 700 buildings. So as you can imagine, maintaining all the roofs and bathrooms and picnic tables and everything else, it really requires a tremendous amount of work. There is a challenge, certainly, of not having tax dollars that go into our park system as it does in many other states. And roughly, most other states, it's anywhere from 30 to 60% where their tax dollars are paying for the budget.
General fund money.
General fund money. So, you know, it's a decision that the legislature has taken, so we just try to live with that. And Phil Bryce is the director of parks. He's been on about a year now. He really is formerly was head of forest and lands, has a good understanding of how the agency operates, and he's doing a super job, and I think you'll see better and better things. You know, we're, again, we have to run it like a business, but at the same time, we also recognize that we can't, you know, ask somebody to pay $30 to come to our parks. We need to keep that cost as low as possible, so we are finding other ways to raise revenue so that we're able to keep it. And you know,
because it's a public resource. So.
It is a public resource. And more importantly, I think, is we have parks around the state. And some parks, we don't make money or we lose a little bit. But it's very important to that region. We don't want to have somebody say, well, I'd like to go to a state park, but I've got to drive 60 miles. So it is important that we have these parks available to people that are all over the state. And again, some of them aren't going to make money, but we need those that do make money to be able to run it as one park system, and that's what we try to do.
Well, speaking of those that make money and those that don't, I remember a couple years back, Commissioner Baldwin, it may have been 2 years ago, it may have been 4 years ago, there were rumors that the state had put the parks on a priority list with the thought that those ranked at the top would receive the most resources and attention, and those ranked closer to the bottom might even be sold or leased. You and I talked about this. This caused a huge outcry.
It did indeed, and I think in some ways it was one of the discussions we were having when we were doing a master plan for the park system, and we had an awful lot of discussions about a variety of ways that we could do it. It wasn't determined that that's the route, but certainly when it came public, it was obviously it caused a firestorm.
So it was a document that was a working thing. It wasn't definite, but it got leaked? Is that what you're saying?
I don't think it was leaked. I think it was just it started to get out so people could comment on it, and then once it got out, again, it caused this firestorm. In some ways, it probably was a good thing because it did highlight the difficulties we were having of trying to manage a park system that there are no general funds in for operationally, that we could just about do it, but we couldn't make the capital improvements. And that's why we were thinking, as somebody had suggested, is, you know, should we consider getting rid of some of those parks? You know, I think, again, the legislature recognized that, so they've done a really good job of giving us more resources. You know, I don't want to complain about it. It certainly is not necessarily enough to be able to do all of the maintenance that we need to do, but it's been much better. And I think it's because people said, wait a minute, if we're going to start selling our parks, then we better be taking care of this. And I think that the legislature got the word from a lot of citizens, and that's one of the reasons that we were able to get more resources when it came to capital improvements.
In an era of limited resources, as we've been in for the last, 4 or 5 years at least, how terrible is it, though, to rank your priorities like any business or family would do and say, you know, this one's working, this one isn't? I mean, maybe it's not such a terrible thing to lease or sell off some of the lesser performing parks.
Well, I still feel that because our parks are one system and that they are regional benefits, that it is important for us to be able to keep them. And, you know, if it's a question of all of our park systems, in effect, going down, then I guess I would get to that point, then I would say maybe we ought to consider that. But I think it's important for us, and Phil Bryce agrees with this, that we look at ways that we can raise revenue in other ways so that we have improved our retail sales. We've gone from, you know, under $2 million in retail sales to over $3 million.
These are stores located at the parks.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we have, you know, a real effort. Again, we don't want to compete with, you know, some of the areas that have large retail, but it's helpful for some people to be able to access things at the beach or whatever, you know, day use camp it is. And so we're pushing more in that area than finding ways to either raise the rates or have to close parks that don't come up with a surplus at the end of the year.
The rates went up a little bit recently, right?
They did at the beginning of the year, and there are some places that we're trying, you know, a flat fee for a vehicle, and so we're always doing a little bit, you know, of tweaking here and there to see what works well and how people react to it and what they think. And again, it's our parks, to me, help us to attract visitors. But it also is important to remember that there are a lot of our citizens that use our parks. And so we've got to do a really good job for them and try to keep the prices as competitive as possible so that we're, again, a family, you know, that used to going to White Lake or Sunapee, don't find themselves in saying, you know, we can't afford this anymore.
Our phone number for you to join us with Commissioner George Bald of the Department of Resources and Economic Development is 1-800-892-6477. As we look at tourism and state lands and parks, give us a call with your questions and comments on those factors, on those aspects of the department's job. We'll talk in a couple minutes about economic development too and job growth and so forth. But for now, you can join us 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Commissioner Bald, first up is Mark in Deerfield. Hi, Mark. You're on the air. Go ahead. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I was just curious. I'm part of a group that used to use the 4-H Club that was at the top of Bear Brook State Park. And I understand that that location lost its lease, and due to the fact that they weren't having a positive income. And that location, unfortunately, appears it's going to need a lot of revitalization before it can be used as a camp again. I'm just kind of curious as to what the state had in mind as far as those kinds of locations, because I understand that camp was built during Theodore Roosevelt's administration, and that handicap accessibility requirements are going to require a huge overhead ahead of time before they can even consider that to release the location, and what your thoughts on that would be.
Right. Thanks a lot for the call, Mark. You know, he asks a specific question, but I'm guessing it applies to a lot of parks.
Well, it certainly does as far as making them accessible, and we want them to be accessible. You know, there are a lot of places that we can't, obviously, because of the terrain or some other aspect, but wherever we can, we certainly want to do that. I'm glad Mark asked that question because I know that the people through the 4-H program were very disappointed that they had to stop offering that camp at Bear Brook, and we were disappointed that they couldn't continue. But we have decided that we need to find a way to be able to get that back on track and see how we can use that. We're actually in the next month or so, we're going to the Governor and Council with a request to do a study on all the buildings there, you know, how historic they are and what it would take to do some of the renovations. So we haven't forgotten about that. We recognize what an important asset it is. And, you know, stay tuned. I think that there'll probably be a request for some capital improvements going forward.
So even though your day-to-day operations are funded by fees and what people spend at the retail stores inside, capital improvements, big projects like the Hampton Beach renovation, like the renovation that Mark would like to see happen, those are funded from general fund dollars.
They are indeed. It's part of the capital budget process.
Mark, thanks a lot for calling in. And up next is Karen in Derry. Hi, Karen, you're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you. My question, I guess, pertains to Bear Brook because that's where I visited the most, but I assume it applies to other parks in the state, too. I was just wondering why it seems like there's only certain times of the year when fees are collected, but people are using the park throughout the year.
Sure, for snowmobiling and snowshoeing and mountain biking and so forth, Karen. So thanks a lot for calling in. What do you think, Commissioner Bald?
It's sometimes, depending on the number of people, you know, there are a number of parks that are open, let's say in May. People can use them, but there isn't anybody that's there taking a fee. The numbers will dictate whether we pay somebody to stand there and collect that money. Sometimes it's also a question of what services we're providing. So in some locations, you know, the bathhouses aren't open, and so we feel like it's not fair to be charging somebody to come in and say, you know, but you have to drive down to the gas station if you need to use bath facilities. So, and again, one of the issues is just how many people will come. It's a weather issue. We run into this sometimes at Hampton where, mid-May, we don't have the staff or the trash cans out or a lot of those things. And all of a sudden we get, you know, a 70-degree weekend and we're just inundated. And it's hard to deal with those situations. But it isn't that that we don't think we – again, the question is, do we pay somebody to stand there and collect and –
Is it worth it?
Right.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for the call, Karen. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. We're talking this hour with George Ball, Commissioner of the Department of Resources and Economic Development. We will be talking in just a moment about some of his efforts to attract businesses to the state. But as we talk about tourism and state parks and state forests, you can join us with your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And one more question about state parks, Commissioner Bald, and you and I again have talked about this over the years. There's been talk off and on about leasing Cannon Mountain to a private operator, as is done with Mount Sunapee, state-owned but privately run. Where does that conversation stand right now about Cannon Ski Mountain?
Well, the legislature has looked at that. The last 3 or 4 years, there's been a determination not to go forward with that, which I think is wise. Cannon Mountain Ski Area is an integral part of Franconia Notch State Park and would be difficult to pull that out and have it operated privately.
Unlike Sunapee, which is kind of a standalone.
Exactly. Sunapee was, is all by itself as a mountain. The day use area is across the street and was easily separated. There are no other activities there. And also, I think an important point is when the decision was made to lease Sunapee, the infrastructure was in very poor shape. And fortunately, the firm that was selected did an excellent job of making capital improvements there and really bringing up how that was operated. We've done that at Cannon Mountain, and we have a tremendously large investment in the flume, not the flume, in the tram, and that's used both summer and winter. And so I think we've also been profitable or in the black 5 out of the last 6 years. This past year, we
at
did
Cannon.
Not.
Wow,
and,
I didn't know that.
Everybody lost money this past year, but the 5 years before and 2 years ago, we set a record. We had a surplus of over $1 million in the operations of that facility. So I think that it's running well. John DeVivo's the mountain manager. He's doing a great job. He's got a great team there. And I think that we are providing benefits for that whole area. But again, it's such an integral part of Franconia Notch State Park that to break that up and lease it to the private sector, I think, would be a mistake.
Now, from what I remember, as part of that Sunapee deal, some of the profits from Sunapee were to go toward improvements at Cannon. Is that right?
That's exactly right. The idea is that the Cannon could borrow up to $6 million a year. Up to $6 million for capital improvements, and that would be funded partially by the revenue that came from Sunapee.
Here's an email from Ray in Silver Lake. He says, have a busy and productive retirement. And we'll talk in a couple minutes about what might be in store for you once you step down. But Ray also says, the state parks are a great resource. I have known several town recreation departments that use the parks as a vital part of their program. Many young kids get to see more of our state through travel to these places, and they get a safe place to swim and hike at a reasonable cost. This is an important part of their education. Ray, thanks for that email. It reminds me of an effort that I think the state parks have been making over the past couple years to really get kids, you know, back into the parks, back outside, this whole nature deficit disorder that people worry about.
They certainly have. The parks has done a wonderful job in that area. And, you know, I'll just give you an example. 3 weeks ago, I was at Audiorn State Park, and they were having a celebration with a number of families that had been involved in a Great Pursuit of Parks program. And a woman walked up to me and said, this has changed our family. She said, it's brought us closer together. And she said, my children are so excited about what they've learned in the park system. I was just taken aback at how passionate she was about it. But she said, I can't thank you and your team enough. And I can't thank my team enough in parks, because that great Parks Pursuit has just been a wonderful program.
Let's take one more if we could before the break. This is Arlen in Newmarket. Hi, Arlen. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I'm actually driving, but I just drove by the subject matter, which is the Rockingham Rail Trail. emanates out of Newfields and goes all the way to Massabesic. Terrific resource. But my question relates to shared or competing use. Specifically, you have mountain bikes out there, you have runners, and you have horses, and the horses make deposits and kind of cause trouble for others. And you know, just how do you address competing uses and popularity?
You know, Arlen, this is a great question. We've done whole programs on this idea. In the wintertime, you've got cross-country skiers and snowmobilers. In the summer, you've got horses, maybe ATVs, hikers. It's tough.
It is difficult, and he has raised an excellent question. And as you said, we could go on for hours and hours about competing uses. I think that we try to those places that we can do that we certainly do. There are other places where we just decide that it's best to have one use. You know, the ATV park in Berlin, that was Jericho Mountain. You know, the idea there is it's not multiple use. I mean, certainly you can hike there if you want, but you've got to be prepared to, you know, deal with ATVs because that's what's there. There are a lot of trails that it is difficult, but we try to work with the organizations. You know, when it comes to horses, he's absolutely right, but we work very closely with equestrian groups on how to deal with the issues of, you know, everything causes some environmental damage, and a horse going up a trail can certainly, dig things up too. So, but again, working with those organizations to minimize the damage.
All right. Thanks for the call, Arlen. We'll take more after a short break, so stay with us.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from the Fenton Family Dealerships, Toyota, Volvo, Honda, Subaru, and Hyundai of Keene, treating the needs of each individual customer with singular concern. FentonDealerships.com. And Plymouth State University, offering new graduate education options, including 18 MED programs and a new postmaster's higher education program. Plymouth.edu/graduate. Good morning. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
Most of the work and few of the benefits.
Online at wordofmouthradio.org, a playwright and lounge singer who lost his day job composes a wry and wrenching ode to those suddenly left behind and unemployed.
I got a place to go in the morning. Going to work.
I'm Virginia Prescott. Word of Mouth insources new ideas. Online, all the time, at wordofmouthradio.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, a new book on the war within the war in Afghanistan. Email us your questions and comments before the program at exchange@nhpr.org. And join us tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today, retiring Commissioner George Ball talks about his tenure with New Hampshire's Department of Resources and Economic Development. You can join our conversation. Call in 1-800-892-6477. What role do you see the department playing in improving New Hampshire's economic climate over the years. What criticisms do you have? What advice do you have for Commissioner Bald about how the state government could do a better job making New Hampshire friendlier to businesses? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Commissioner Bald, let's go right back to the phones. And Lou's calling in from Whitefield. Hi, Lou. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. Commissioner Bald, this is really a card of thanks. You recognize me as the president of Malecki Lock in Groveton, and you work most closely with my business partner, Barry Normando, as we launched and began to develop our new manufacturing and sales company. It's been our experience that dealing with the Department of Resources and you in particular, Commissioner, and your representative, Vina Lamont-Hangridge, is always a very special pleasure. We've always found you to be extraordinarily responsive, very prompt, very thorough, and with a genuine interest in what we, whatever challenge we face or whatever need may arise. And I'm very pleased to say that we've recently been able to engage in international activities for our business, primarily through the support that we've had from Department of Resources and the fine people that work there. And it's a little bittersweet to know that you're leaving the department, Commissioner, but with a very heartfelt thank you. Our business is much better off today because of you.
Wow. Lou, thanks a lot for calling in.
Well, Lou, thank you very much. And I'm glad you also mentioned Vina Lamont-Hang up in the North Country. He works very hard. And, you know, it's the North Country people work hard to try to develop new businesses, and my hat's off to Lou and Barry for the work that they do. I'm glad you mentioned the international portion. New Hampshire, it's very important that we have the exports that we have because it helps our economy to grow. It isn't just products that are sold in New Hampshire, but as well or the country. But as I mentioned, we sell a lot to our trading partner, Canada, Mexico, China, Germany, France, England. And those things are very important. It really helps our economy to have those type of activities.
Seems like a small state like New Hampshire wouldn't have a significant export sector, but it does.
It does indeed. And again, it's crucial. You know, one of the disappointments is through the recent budget process that we used to have 7 people in our international trade office. We're down to 2. And it's very important, excuse me, large companies don't need our help. You know, GE, BAE Systems, they can do it. But a lot of small companies, excuse me, a lot of small companies really need our assistance. And, you know, there's so many complications and people are worried about, well, what's it like, you know, am I going to get myself into trouble? And our team really helps a lot of companies. We have many companies that never thought of exporting that have found that they were able to do it. It's helped their company tremendously, and it's created new jobs.
So what's the impact of going from 7 to 2 at the International Trade Office, especially losing longtime director Don Wivel?
It's set us back. Tina Kasem is our new director now. She's very bright, hardworking. But if you have people that have those experiences, it's a lot easier to consult with companies, to help them, to give them direction on different things that they should look out for, do research for them, to be able to help if somebody comes and says, you know, I sell, you know, pens, which countries would be best customers? It takes some work and effort, and when you have 2 people versus 7, it's I'm not saying we're not doing a good job, but we're not doing as good a job as we have in the past, given the numbers.
Let's take another call if we could. Lou, thanks a lot for that one. And Corey is calling in from Berlin. Hi, Corey. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for having me. Commissioner Bald, I just had a quick question for you on trying to get events like GNC Enduro Racing up to the ATV park. Has any efforts gone into that?
Corey, thanks a lot for calling in. And if I could just ask you quickly, Corey, how do you see that ATV park working in with reviving the North Country's economy?
So far, so good. I mean, it's definitely nice up there, that's for sure. I enjoy it myself. And I know Jericho Motorsports has seen an uptick in business, I guess, from what I hear.
Okay. Thanks for calling in, Corey. Go ahead, Commissioner Bald.
We are working hard to develop more activities there, so it's a situation that more people are become aware of it. As far as all the different type of races, I know our Trails Bureau certainly is working with the local organizations, and I can't give enough credit to the local organizations. It really what makes a difference. We can't, you know, our Trails Bureau is very limited on some of these items. And the local groups, they just are tremendous to work with. But we want to continue to grow that. We are opening up a campground there so that people can ride from the campsites, and that's both a combination of tent sites and camping cabins as well. But I know that you'll see over time, Chris Gamache, who runs the Trails Bureau, is committed to continuing to bring people from outside of the state to visit that area to be able to ride not only there but many of the other areas in the North Country.
You know, another issue for North Country development that we've talked about for a long time is a lack of high-speed internet access in some areas of the North Country. Here's an email to that effect. This person didn't give a name. He says, Commissioner Bald, you've gone on record supporting the 66 million stimulus-funded supported telecom network being built and operated by UNH. He says many feel this network, if completed, will siphon off large business customers from existing telecom companies who've already spent millions investing in infrastructure that travels the same routes as the UNH network. So this person says, how do you reconcile these two positions, encouraging private investment in New Hampshire while supporting identical government-owned and operated endeavors? If you could, Commissioner Bald, as you answer that question, enlighten the audience in general who may not be familiar with this issue of private versus public development of broadband infrastructure in the North Country.
There are a number of locations where the caller is correct that there will be some overlap, but there are a number of locations where there won't be overlap. We work very closely with a lot of the companies involved, and I think if you called Fairpoint or some of the other companies, they would tell you that our agency works very closely with them. We felt that this would be a program that would be able to bring high speed to the northern part of the state that wouldn't otherwise occur if it was just the private sector, and that's the reason that I was very supportive. It is.
Is it muddying the waters, though? Is it taking away incentives for private companies to invest?
It's a very complicated circumstance, and it was an opportunity for us to be able to, or the state to get that grant. And again, the idea is to bring it to those locations where they either don't have good access or no access. And so that's the reason that we were supportive. But we continue to work closely with UNH and, again, with the companies that are involved as well.
All right. Well, I want to thank that person for emailing us. The email address is exchange@nhpr.org. The phone number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. You know, we talked earlier with our caller, Lou, about the importance of international trade. You mentioned New Hampshire manufacturing firms and how manufacturers of all sorts of products are able to ship their products overseas. I want to ask you another question about manufacturing. It's related. Businesses talk about a skills gap in manufacturing, saying, look, we have got the jobs. We've got the jobs right now. These are good jobs, but we don't have the right workers to fill them. What's your take, Commissioner Bald, on the skills gap?
It certainly is there. And, you know, if I was a machinist, I would have 15 companies calling me right now saying, you know, we'd love to hire you. There are a number of jobs in those mechanical skills, as well as some of the engineering that are really in demand. It's one of the great concerns that I have. New Hampshire doesn't compete well with states that have large giveaways. You know, we just don't, because we don't do it that way. But we rely on having a talented workforce. So when companies come here, they're looking for, can I find the employees that can do the work? And it doesn't matter what tax incentives you offer. If you can't find the employees to do the work, you're not going to be successful here. So to me, it's very important that we recognize that investments in education, both at the community college level and the college level, at the university level, are crucial to our future of being able to attract new business and supply the businesses that are here. You know, that's another key point for me, is we've got to make sure that we're taking care of the companies that are here. If we have companies that have multiple locations and we don't have the employees for them, they're going to start looking in other locations.
You know, two more questions on this. We've done a fair number of programs on the skills gap. We spoke a couple weeks ago, though, with a Wharton School of Business professor who's written a book saying the skills gap is largely a myth. And I wonder what you think about that, Commissioner Bald. He says there isn't a skills gap. If there is, businesses need to look in the mirror. He said businesses have unrealistic expectations. They're looking for the perfect candidate who doesn't exist, and they're not willing to invest in even a little bit of training to bring prospective candidates up to the level they need. What do you think about that, that, you know, the skills gap has been overblown and that businesses have in part helped create it?
Oh, I disagree that that it's overblown, because, you know, I have, again, when we're dealing with companies, it's one of the issues that comes up often. I also disagree that companies aren't doing something. They're, you know, I hope I won't embarrass them, but Whalen Engineering in the western part of the state, New England Wire up in Lisbon, they actually are working with the high schools and having young people come in and work in a factory or learn some of the aspects of working in a factory so that they have an understanding of all the job opportunities that are available to them. And this is, you know, the companies are paying for a lot of this activity. A lot of companies are doing their own training. That is, they're hiring people and, you know, training them to be to develop some of these skills. But to me, it seems like it is a partnership. And in New Hampshire, I can tell you, we've had numerous meetings with the governor and, you know, the Ross Cattell, the chancellor of the community college system, to understand what companies needs and also to work with companies. So it isn't that the companies are saying, okay, community college, it's your responsibility. This is what we want. But having partnerships so that they can provide internships and other ways of having people that feel comfortable about going into manufacturing. It doesn't have to just be manufacturing. There can be a lot of training, but it still is, whether it's, you know, a Fidelity or John Hancock or Liberty Mutual, we've got to provide those workers, because other states will do that. I would also add that I think it's important, again, to recognize that if we're going to be a business-friendly state, we've got to understand what are the crucial issues to business. And I would argue that far more than the tax issue, and I'm not saying it's not an important issue.
The low tax environment that we offer.
Far more than that is, again, the ability to find good employees.
So how do you reconcile the two? A general desire in the state to keep taxes low, and yet a general desire, especially among businesses, to have a strong system of public higher education, you know, the university system along with the community colleges. I mean, can you really have it both ways?
Well, I think it's, again, it's one of the things that the legislature has to understand, that where do we make our money? We make our money from businesses. And so business profits tax and business enterprise tax are our largest taxes. So, but it's also understanding what businesses want. If you ask a business, do you want to pay less taxes, it's no surprise that they would say yes. But if you said to them, but, you know, we're going to cut back on the university, we're going to cut back on the community college, we're going to cut back on transportation, we're going to cut back on environmental services, you know, so we don't have to pay for those things, they're not going to be happy. Transportation is a crucial component for companies to either get their employees to work and to get their products out. It still is very important, even though in this internet age we think, well, transportation isn't as important, but it certainly is, and we need a good system of transportation. So it to me, it's very important, again, to understand what is it that our businesses need and how best do we do it. We can't guarantee that we're going to provide everything that a company needs, because there isn't one company. You know, if it's a company in the western
right.
part of the
different
state.
Different desires, different
right.
needs.
But I think it's still, to me, the education piece is such a crucial piece of our economy going forward.
Well, I could ask you 10 more questions about that, but we only have about a minute left, Commissioner Bald. And I did want to close out with a couple emails thanking you for your many years of service. This is from Mary Ann. She said, as board of director of the New Hampshire Travel Council, we'll miss your leadership, along with the director of tourism, Lori Harnois. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, in the growth of the tourism in New Hampshire. So that's all the best from Mary Ann. Jerry says, we all need to be grateful for the many years of great contributions of George Ball, both at Dread and many years on the Seacoast. Says a lot of other nice things. He says, we'll miss you over on the Seacoast. I'm just curious, Commissioner Ball, this is a big deal. You're stepping down after all these many years in economic development. What do you think the legacy of George Ball is?
I hope that the legacy is that I have, every time I meet with the people that work with me, I remind them how important their work is, that it affects people's lives, that what we do, whether it's economic development or forest and lands, parks, that in some ways we're affecting the life of our citizens, of our visitors, of our businesses. And that really is very important for us to remember, that every day when we wake up, we got to say to ourselves, boy, I make a difference in somebody's life, so I'm going to do my very best. I hope that the customer service of Dread has improved dramatically in my time, and I'm convinced that with the people that are there, that it'll get better and better.
Well, I want to thank you very much for taking the time with us today and the many interviews that we've sat down for over the last 13 years.
Thank you so much. I've always enjoyed being on the show, and I appreciate what you do for our state and getting information out.
That's George Ball, Commissioner of the Department of Resources and Economic Development. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.